Accession number 10170, reel number 1.
Mr. Walter Spencer, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Spencer?
Yes, I was born at a little village named Shavey Down, which is 3 miles from Ascot in Berkshire. I was born on the 29th of November, 1894, and my earliest recollections were when they put the banners across the street for the relief of Mafeking. When I was about 2 years old, I remember that. It came from across our window to a window across the street, and all the streets were decorated with bunting. When I was 3 years old, my mother took me to Bracknell, which is the nearest village, the other side, toward Reading, and Queen Victoria was coming through that day. She had been to review the troops at Sandhurst, who had returned from the Boer War, and she was riding in an open carriage, and there were two lovely grey horses carrying the carriage. My mother lifted me up, and the carriage stopped immediately against where we were standing. I was waving a little Union Jack at the time, and Queen Victoria, who sat in the open carriage on my side, leaned over and took my Union Jack and waved it to the crowd, who waved and shouted, "Hurrah, hurrah." I remember all about it because it was such a grand sight, and I remember how the postillions were all decorated in their scarlet uniforms and the coachman, and it was quite a grand affair.
Did you know who Victoria was at the time?
Oh, yes, my mother told me that the Queen was coming, and she was the only occupant of the carriage, and I presumed it was her. She was a little old lady and rather white-faced, and I thought she looked very tired, although as a child I had that impression of her. But she put her hand out to me and grasped my hand and said, "Bless you." That's the very words she said to me. And then we went home.
What did your father do for a living?
My father worked at a Swinley Brickfield, which was a handmade brick. Swinley was well known at the time, and he used to dig clay for fivepence a cubic yard, and he was up to his neck, actually, in slurry, and it was very hard work. And in the summertime, he used to use what they called a press, which went along after the bricks had been made and pressed them with the impression TLB, Thomas Lawrence Bracknell, and he was the owner of the brickyard. And they were very renowned as bricks in those times. They actually built the forts just outside Portsmouth Harbour with Thomas Lawrence Bracknell's bricks. My father, for that job in the summertime, got 3 shillings for 1,000 bricks, and he went along each row and tapped the brick out and stamped it and put it back again for that purpose. There were 6 of us in family. I had 2 brothers and 3 sisters. There were 6 of us, and we lived in a place called Oak Cottage, and that was built by his father and my grandfather, my father's father. They are still going now, still occupied, and they were built in 1885. The inscription on his Oak Cottage, 1885.
Did your mother have to work?
Pardon?
Did your mother work?
No, my mother had plenty of work to look after the 6 of us, really.
What sort of family life did you have? Because not much of an income.
A very poor income. My father did very well if he got about 22 shillings a week. It's about his standard wage, would be about £1 a week. And he got a few extras in sometimes when he worked a little bit overtime. But it was a very hard work and very poorly paid.
How did the family manage?
Well, we kept pigs, for one thing. My father was very interested in pigs, and he used to breed pigs, and he used to kill one off occasionally, and that was really our source, main supply of meat. and we had plenty of lard and fats from the pigs, and my father had also a big garden. He used to work hard at it at the weekend, and I used to, we boys used to assist him, and we used to grow all our own vegetables and were practically self-supporting. I started school at the age of 4 and went to Ascot Heath School. It was a very good school, reputed to be. Although an elementary school, we received a very good education. I stayed at Ascot Heath School.
What sort of education was that? Could you tell me a little more about the sort of education you got there?
Yes, we did the what you call the 3 R's, I suppose. Reading, writing and arithmetic, they were our chief ones. And we also did grammar and history and geography. It embodied about all those things, but we did really get a thorough grounding in everything, and our schoolmaster, headmaster, Mr. Millard, was a very good man. He was very stern disciplinarian, but as if you did what you told, everything was all right. I was very happy at school. I was very happy in all my childhood, and my one regret, I think, was that I didn't go to any higher education. I won a scholarship for the Kendrick Grammar School at Reading, which would have taken me into the school free of charge. There was no charge at all for it, but my parents couldn't afford for me to have the train fare every day 13 miles to Reading and back. It was beyond their means to supply it. So I was sent out to work, consequently. At the age of 14, I got employment as a gardener's boy at a place called the Brackens, Ascot. The Brackens was owned by a man named S.K. George, Esquire, and he was a big man in the Power Dufferin works in South Wales, coal works. He used to go down there once a week and come home at weekends and generally boss all around the place. I used to sweep and help mow the lawns and all that kind of thing, all the menial tasks that they thought about, and I got the magnificent sum of 6 shillings a week. For that, I had to be there at 7 in the morning and leave at 5 o'clock at night. After I'd been there...
When did you start there? When did you leave school?
I left school at the age of 13 and a half. We could leave school at 13 and a half or 13... when we had passed what we call a labour exam. A labour examination we used to sit at the local school, and if provided you had employment to go to and you could pass that exam, you could leave school before you were 14. But 14 was the real age for full education. Anyhow, I was 13 and a half when I went to Wheeler's. I wasn't there long. And in 1909... my father got me apprenticed to Mr. Wheeler, coach and motorsmith and a general garage in Ascot. I worked there as an apprentice blacksmith from 1909 to 1914. On August, I should have...
Could you tell me a bit about your work at the blacksmith?
Yes, I can. It was very hard work, by the way. One of the jobs that I used to do was to saw 12-inch girders with a hand hacksaw, and it took a very long time, and it was very hard work, and I used to go home at night. I could hardly bend my arms. It was what you call proper work. We had various interesting jobs to do there in the way of fences and gates for the Ascot racecourse, and we were employed fixing them after we'd done them. We used to go out and fix them in the racecourse. It was a job which, to my mind, was far too tough for me to handle at that age. And I used to strike with a 10-pound hammer when we were hammering things out, springs and that kind of thing. And consequently, I wasn't very, very sorry when I left the blacksmith's shop.
During all this time, had you been a member of any of the boys' organisations of the time? The boys' organisations, like the Boy Scouts, Church Lads Brigade, anything like that?
Yes. I was a member of the Church Lads Brigade, the Ascot Church Lads Brigade, and we used to go out camping in Windsor Great Park, and we used to meet the Windsor lads there sometimes and have what we called sham fights. We also had a miniature rifle range at Ascot at one end of the racecourse. We always partake of that, and we really enjoyed it. There'd be a matter of about 50 lads in, I should think, at the time I was, and we had a very nice time at weekends, camping out.
Did you camp most weekends with them?
Well, I should think about every other weekend we'd go there.
And what exactly would you do on these camps?
For one thing, we cooked our own meals, and we had sing songs at night. We used to light the bonfire and that kind of thing. But we were chiefly engaged in what we call scouting in Windsor Great Park. They'd send probably two lads out dressed slightly different to what we were as a disguise, and we had to go and find them. We'd give them about 10 minutes start, and then they had to go and hide themselves either among the trees or in the long grass or something like that in the park, and our duty was to scout them out. And that was quite a long job sometimes, kept us busy running round.
What sort of scouting methods were you taught? Were you actually taught how to track and that sort of thing? How to stay out of sight?
Different things. One feature is that most of us were taught to ride bikes by the scoutmaster, and that was very useful to us, although there weren't many of us who could afford a bike. We knew how to ride one when we did get one. And we played cricket and football in season, and it was altogether a lad's life, you might say.
You called him a scoutmaster, but this was the Church Lads Brigade.
No, he was the head of the Great Church Lads Brigade. It wasn't scouts. I think it was before the scouts were formed in that part. Yeah.
Did you have a night you used to meet on? Did you have any drill nights?
Oh yes, we had drill nights, or we had part of even when we went out to camp, we had part of our time was made up in forming fours and marching around, that kind of thing. But we used to like the scouting part of it because a bit more liberty about it and a bit more curiosity in seeing who could find the fellow who'd been sent out.
How about this drill? How much what of that was? Was it military-style drill?
Oh, yes, strictly military style, just almost the same as I encountered later in the Guards. It was numbering off and forming fours and marching around in fours and marching in what they used to call column, dividing us up into different sections and having section drill. And also we had PT. We had the use of a gymnasium where we could, when the nights were bad, when it was raining, we used to adjourn to the gymnasium, and then we had an instructor in gymnastics. He was actually, he's made a sergeant, although he's a man. He was a military man, really, but he acted like as a sergeant in the CLB to us, you see.
Were most of the instructors in the Church Lads Brigade from military background?
Yes, a good many of them. One of them was a retired regimental sergeant. He just used to do it by way of a hobby, I suppose. Came along and put us through our paces. But it was all very enjoyable. There wasn't too much of the martial air about it. It was quite sporting, as you might say.
What about the rifle training? What were you using? What sort of rifles were you trained in?
Oh, we didn't have the course. We didn't have the 303. Only in small shotgun rifles. I don't know what the name of it was. It might have been made by the Enfield people, but it was a smaller rifle altogether, and it used to fire a small bullet. I should think about 3/8 of an inch in diameter and about a quarter of an inch long. And we used to fire at targets. You see, they used to wind the targets up along, and each man had a firing. And if you passed the firing test, you were allowed to wear cross guns on your arm.
Were you taught much about these rifles and how? Were you actually taught how to do it formally, or were you just left to get on with shooting?
Well, there wasn't really much to learn. It was only like an ordinary, we'll say, cap pistol, which was just fired one shot at a time. There was nothing machine rolled about it. It was just an individual shot that she took. And you put one bullet at a time, you see, and loaded it up and fired it.
What connection did the Church Lance Brigade have with the church?
Oh, a very close connection, because most of the lads who were in the church choir were in the Church Lance Brigade. And, of course, we used to meet and get to know one another, and it was all very good fun.
Were you in the choir as well?
I was in the choir as well, yes. I was in All Saints Choir at Ascot from the age of six until my voice broke at 14, and then I went back again later on singing bass from about 1916 to 1918 until I joined the army. I was working at Wheeler's as an apprentice, and my apprenticeship would have been finished. My 5 years apprenticeship would have finished on the 7th of September 1914. But when the war broke out on August the 4th, the first payday after that, I said...
Hang on, before we get on to that, were you expecting war to break out? Had you been following the international situation?
No, really, as a boy, I wasn't much interested in it at that time. But my father used to talk to us a little bit about it, and he said there might probably be a war, but we didn't know. But it came kind of as a bolt from the blue for us, and I felt very patriotic, and I couldn't get there soon enough.
Do you remember what you were doing when you heard about the war breaking out?
Actually, I was at work. I was at work one at a time. A fellow came in and told us that the war had been declared. I think it would be on the Monday morning after August the 4th. He came and proclaimed it. And I said to the foreman blacksmith, Sam Shears, I'm packing up, Sam. I'm going to join the army. And Sam replied, you can't, Walter. You haven't finished your apprenticeship. You're a bound apprentice. I said, oh, well, we'll see about that, Sam. Anyhow, I went and saw Colonel Gordon Carter, who was the... He was secretary to the racecourse officials. He held a very big position there and lived on the job. And he was the district recruiting officer.
How had you come to know him? Was this through your blacksmith's work on the railways?
Yes, mostly. I was acquainted with him through going on doing different jobs on the racecourse. He knew me by name anyhow. And I asked him his advice. I said I wanted to join the army. So I said, what would you advise me to do? Oh, he said, join the Grenadier Guards. He said, the finest regiment in the British Army. And emphasised the fact. And he issued me with a travelling warrant to Reading. And on the Saturday afternoon, I went to Reading Barracks and enlisted and took the King's Fillion. I was at Reading Barracks until the Monday.
Can you remember whether there was any sort of enlistment procedure, any medical examination or any questions asked?
Yes, there was kind of a brief examination when I got to Reading Barracks before they sent me on to the Guards Depot. On the Monday morning, I saw the doctor first, and he gave me a A1 certificate, or said I was all right, and so I got a warrant then issued to convey me from Reading down to the Guards Depot, which was at Caterham in Surrey.
Did your parents think of you having enlisted?
Fun?
What did your parents think about you having enlisted and your plans to enlist?
My father didn't know until he got to Caterham. When I got to Caterham, I found the place was absolutely flooded with men, recruits, and there was nowhere to sleep. There was not much organisation because the initial call had been so successful. There were chaps to join the Grenadiers, Scots, Irish, and Coldstream Guards. All those regiments had their training headquarters at Caterham at the time. The first night I spent on the football field lying rough with several hundred more, I think it'd be 500 of us on the football field, all laid down in their civilian clothes, of course. And I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was cold, starved to death, and I found that someone had pinched my overcoat. So, being a good soldier, I got up and went, pinched someone else's and got down to it again. I thought I was learning soldiering pretty quickly then. Anyhow, we had rather a rough time there because there was no khaki to be issued. There was no khaki. And we were stayed in these civilian clothes all the time we were at the depot, which was 16 weeks, and we looked a rather a ragtag mob. We were what they call squadded after 3 days. That's we were put under the command of a sergeant or a corporal who looked after it, and we were lucky to get accommodation in what they call the old gymnasium for our squad. That was 60 men got in there, and we were there for the whole 16 weeks. The system there was when a squad had what they call passed out, they were sent up to London, up to the main barracks at Chelsea or to Wellington, and then there was room for another squad to come along. And we stayed there after 16 weeks. We were passed out at the depot.
Hang on, I'd like to talk a bit about your initial training at Caterham.
Yes.
What sort of men did you find yourself in this squad with? What were they like?
Do you mean the men who
in your squad, well, your fellow squaddies?
They were a mixed crowd. Mostly, we'll say, labourers' children and artisans. And there was nobody there of the college type or anything like that. All fairly rough lads and rural, you know, very country lads. But all very good pals together. There were never many wrong words. I mean, when rations were distributed, there was no falling out about it or anything like that. They were quite an agreeable crowd.
Did you have a special friend or special friends that you made amongst them?
A special?
Friend.
Yes, I made several, but you see, the trouble with making friends, again, in the army was this. They usually got drafted off to somewhere else when you got to know them well. They'd go into another platoon or something like that, and you'd lose track of them. I couldn't remember anybody specially at Caterham, but you made friends more when you got up to the battalion at Chelsea.
If we now look at the actual training you did, perhaps the best way is to take a day's routine, if you can still remember it. I know that's difficult.
Yes, I remember.
What time would you get up?
Roughly, I remember the day's training, which runs something like this. You'd have everybody at 6 o'clock, and you'd have what they call breakfast parade at 6:45. At 6:45, the whole of the would parade out on the barrack square, and you would be inspected, and you'd be expected to have shaved and washed and cleaned your boots. It didn't come in so much for a start uniform, because you had no uniform just at the preliminary time, but then after you had your breakfast, you went down.
What would the breakfast be? Sorry to interrupt. What would the breakfast be?
Breakfast would mainly consist of bacon. We either get bacon or sausages. That was the two ringing the changes. Whether you didn't see any eggs or anything like that at that time, but it was a fairly good breakfast and a pretty good allowance of bread when we were in the barracks at Chelsea.
Sticking to when we were at Caterham in particular, would it still be sausages and bacon there?
When we were at Caterham, it was rough, but the food was still good. We still got bacon and a good hunk of bread and a dixie full of tea. And the tea was served up in very large dixies that contained about 10 gallons, roughly. And they'd just bring it up to the barrack room, and you'd put all your mess tins alongside of one another, and the sergeant would dole it out, you see, the tea. But there was always plenty.
And still at Caterham, what would you do after breakfast?
After breakfast at Caterham, you'd be on parade at 9 o'clock. And going on to the time when we had regimental issue of khaki, you had to have your buttons clean. Buttons clean, boots clean, everything clean, and your rifle clean. You were issued with rifles, by the way, the same time as you got your car key.
You got them while you were at Caterham, did you?
No. This wasn't. Sorry, I've got Chelsea now in my mind. No,
Caterham.
Caterham, we had no car key.
But you'd still have this parade at. You'd still be paraded at 9.
At Caterham, yes, 9 o'clock. We were on the Barrack Square at Caterham from 9 o'clock until 12:30. Then we used to
what
have.
What would you be doing on the Barrack Square? Was that?
A drilling, just ordinary foot drill, without rifles or anything. Just forming squares and forming fours, forming platoons, marching round, standing to attention, slope arms, standing at ease, stand easy, guard mounting and that kind of thing. We went through all those movements on the drill ground and gradually progressed in them, you see.
But that was all you did? You didn't get trained in anything else?
No. You got filled toward the latter end, about the last fortnight I was at Caterham. We used to do what we call field drill. We used to go out onto Colston Common and get into extended order. We'd see the sergeant give the order, to the right, extend. So you'd extend all to the right in one long line, and then he'd give the signal to advance. And we did a lot of that field training, but of course, at that time, it was really obsolete. It's what they'd been doing during the South African War, and it went, although we never found it necessary, but we did quite a lot of it.
So that was all you did in the morning. You said 12:30. What happened at 12:30 at Caterham?
Well, we used to usually have the field drill in the afternoon and the foot drill in the morning, and.
You get your. What would be for lunch? At,
I see. Yeah, going on lunch. Yes. Well, you'd have mostly stew, but it was good stew. They'd have perhaps mutton one day and beef the next and that kind of thing. But the staple food at Chelsea was almost the same as it was when we got to France. That was a good stew with vegetables in and. And plenty of meat, and occasionally you'd get some kind of pudding, suet pudding, I think they call it, and a bit of jam on a treacle or something like that.
So in the afternoon you were doing foot drill in the early period, and later on you'd be doing field drill.
That's right.
Were you not taught anything about rifle training or bayonet training at all?
It didn't come into it, not in the early stages. Later on it did.
That's at Chelsea it would come in, would it?
Yes, well, actually, we didn't get rifles, you see, until we got to Chelsea. There weren't really enough 303s to go around at the time. They were short of practically everything because there had been such an influx of recruits all of a sudden, you see, and they couldn't deal with it all.
Did you do any route marches?
Oh, yes, we did route marches at Caterham. We used to go down the hill towards the station and around for about... We'd probably do a route march which would last an hour, and we had to finish off with coming up the hill again. We were all getting a bit fagged, and it's a very big hill from down the bottom of the town up to the top to the barracks. But we used to enjoy it. It was exercise for us as we were there. We were young and able to do it.
How did the civilians react as you marched around?
Oh, the civilians, they got used to it around there. They didn't take much notice of it. Of course, having been down there for 16 weeks in civilian clothing at the depot, when we left the depot to go, we were pronounced as fit to join the battalion, that 60 men in our platoon would go up all together. We went by train from Caterham to Victoria.
Hang on, just one moment, just a couple more things. After you'd finished the afternoon drill, sticking at Caterham, what would you do then?
Oh, well, the evening was free. There wasn't a great deal to do. There was a library, or you could go to... anybody who wanted to go to school could have what they call a continuation class under the Army schoolmaster there. I used to go there very often just to pass the time away, because there was very little else to do. You see, we were right out of the town, and there were no shops to go to, no cinemas or anything like that, and so we'd either go play dominoes and draughts and all those games in the Naffy. The Naffy was the place, you know, where you could get a cup of tea on payment, of course, a private place. One episode that always sticks in my mind was the march when we got out of the train at Victoria Station, looking so disreputable, and most of us wearing what they call stocking hats. They were hats that were issued, you know, to stick on your head. And their boots were worn out, and the backsides of their trousers. We looked a proper motley crew, and the civilians were booing us because someone had told them we were Turkish prisoners. So we didn't get much of a reception for our first visit to London. And we marched down then to Chelsea Barracks, and we got divided up into different barrack rooms. I was in E5, I remember, which was the second landing on one of the locks, and that consisted of 60 beds, you see, which would just accommodate our platoon.